Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Phase Zero, episode 25, coming at you live on Twitch, coming through your speakers in the car, through your headphones, whenever you're watching or listening later on the Apple, Spotify, whatever podcast platform you prefer. I'm your host, Brandon Davis, joined today by Aaron Perrine.
What's going on, BD?
What's up, Aaron? Good to have you, man. Jenna Anderson is here.
Hey, everybody.
And we have a newcomer to the show, first timer. We're going to see how this goes. Chris Killian, Daily Distraction host, aficionado.
How you doing, man?
What's up, dude? Welcome to Phase Zero. How's it feel? How's the weather in here?
Oh, man, it's exciting. I have been wanting to be on this show for a long time now. You finally asked me, so it's great. Hopefully we don't break out into a fist fight on this thing.
Yeah. Honestly, Chris has been, like, my phone battery dies because of how often Chris Killian texts me to be on Phase Zero, and I finally let him on. No, I'm just kidding.
That's I've been Twitter asking notifications Chris killing your battery.
yeah, okay. But listen, so this week's episode, we have a lot to talk about. We got a new Shang-Chi trailer. We got Black Widow reviews. Black Panther started production, and Karen Gillan is talking about Thor 4. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about Loki episode 4. We love to save the spoilers for later in the show. If y'all wouldn't mind, I would love it if you would tweet a link to this show. Twitch.tv/comicbook is where everybody can find it. We want to build a community. We know you all want to be a part of something fun, and we like to monitor the comment section to make sure it stays friendly and inviting, and we love to hear your theories, so the more the merrier. And also, if you're listening later on a podcast platform, leave us a 5-star review, because we are 6 stars, but they won't let you leave that many. And share it with your friends so we can keep on growing and get more interviews and stuff and get y'all involved. But first, let's start with the Shang-Chi trailer. We're going to dissect it a little bit, but reactions. Chris is smirking up there. Chris, you're new to the show. You go first. What did you think of the Shang-Chi trailer?
Oh, man, it was amazing. I mean, we know this. It was awesome. Obviously, the most exciting thing for me was the return of Abomination, and he's gone through a little bit of a transformation, an evolution, if you will. We saw that he has grown his ear fin things from the comics, and he's also got a loincloth now, which means he is no longer with the anatomy of a Ken doll. So it's exciting.
Aaron, what did you think?
It was really, really wild, because I was disconnected from social media for about a week, and then I turn on my phone and the first thing I see is like Abomination and Wong trading these hands, and then like a weird like Captain America shield possibly in the corner. It's just insanity. I'm like, and I'm going to close the app and put my phone face down. That's enough internet for today. Thank you, internet. Only the best.
Jenna, what did you think?
I loved the trailer. Like, the Abomination return totally knocked me off my feet. Like, it was a thing of like, as soon as I looked at the Twitter upload of the trailer and the subtitle said Abomination, I think I blacked out for like a minute, because it was like, oh my god, he's back, and he's back in this context that we weren't expecting him to be in. And then, like, knowing that we have this as kind of the connective tissue between Incredible Hulk and him showing up in the She-Hulk show makes me really happy, because we knew he was going to show up in that, but it's like, what kind of evolution was he going to go through in that meantime? And so having him be comic accurate with his fins fighting Wong in a cage match is just like, that is just the coolest thing that I never could have imagined.
Yeah, honestly, like, the Shang-Chi, I gotta get out of that habit. But it's been like, before we saw anything for movies this year, Shang-Chi was towards the top of my anticipation list, like right up there with Spider-Man, the Batman back when it was in 2021, and the Suicide Squad and stuff. And then that first trailer came out, And it just like didn't, I don't think it got people really excited. And it was obviously just like your first look. And people had cool reactions to it, but I don't think people who were unfamiliar with Shang-Chi, which is most of us, like, let's not lie and act like we're all Shang-Chi experts. And then the second trailer came out and it was awesome. Like, and I think they recognized, like, we might need to throw a little something else in here to get the, you know, the mainstream audience who isn't just with Marvel because it's Marvel to get fired up. So they threw Abomination and Wong in there, smart play. I got real like Black Panther vibes from it, kind of. In the sense of like this empire is kind of becoming questionable or falling. And when he emerged and said like, is this what you wanted? It gave me kind of a feeling similar to like, I want to say that, is this your king? But it felt more like when T'Challa came back up and was like, as you can see, I am not dead. And when he came back to that battle of Wakanda, but I think they're going to be super different movies. But I thought that was cool.
I really love the cage match aspect of it. I mean, that had very X-Men vibes for me, like when we saw Wolverine's debut. And I love the idea of seeing like Marvel heroes just in a pit to the death. I mean, I think that's going to be fantastic. You want to sell a Marvel movie to me, just throw random Marvel characters into a cage match and done deal. So that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing of like, if they're putting these two in the trailer, like what other people could be in the cage match that we don't know about? Like what other people are in this tournament that we just haven't seen because they're saving it for the movie itself? It's like, showing this, then it's going to be crazy.
This is a great way to debut Iron Fist, just saying. I mean, if he's around.
The Netflix characters are still around. I keep hearing more and more about more and more Netflix characters coming back, and it's just like, really exciting stuff coming. But Ro Finerdary said, do we think it's Madripoor that fight is happening in? Very possible. Really possible that's Madripoor. The lighting, like the extravagance of it all, kind of, and like just what's happening, like a criminal safe haven. Like where else is Abomination going to be?
You know, if it is Madripoor too, that would also be a great way to debut someone like Wolverine, right? I mean, I'm not saying that that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen, but Madripoor has a lot of ties to Wolverine in the Frank Miller comics. I mean, so that would be a great place to bring him in as well. Also, I'd like to say, you know, with X-Men ties there with the original cage match, you know, who knows?
Listen, there's no theory too crazy for the show, Chris. Welcome aboard. Stuff out there. And then listen, here's what we do. We throw a bunch of theories out, and the one time we're right, we just act like we never let the audience live that down. We're like, look, we called this. Just don't talk about any of the other ones. We just forget about those. If they happened, no, they didn't. There was an image I wanted to pull up that I'm just going to read out loud, basically, because the Ten Rings are obviously a bit different in the movie than they are in the comics. So I think the reason for that is because the Ten Rings would be so similar to Infinity Stones if they were doing it the same way. So each of the Ten Rings, if you didn't know this, bit of a lesson here for everybody on phase here, a little educational session. We love those. Each has its own power. They all have different colors and stuff. So they're not like Infinity Stones so distinctly colored, but they are different colors. You have the Remaker, which reimagines relationships on a subatomic level. You have one that has influence, creates various forces that cause a body to undergo change. One that causes spin, decelerates time around the wearer, appears as super speed to the watcher. Spectral winds up and warps the air itself and can appear ghostly, or they could not appear at all. The Nightbringer creates a malleable darkness, a dark light. Zero opens a beam of nothingness from the icy heart of outer space, creates a deafening boom as the vacuum is filled. The Liar creates world upon world of illusory fable, as impossible to escape as a tangle of dreams, but vexes the wearer as well. Lightning creates a directable electrical atmospheric discharge. Incandescence contains the miniature heart of a star and scorches the air before it. Nivadalir vibes, huh? Demonic, the irresistible urge that propels into the unknown. The compulsive creates loyalty, creates obsession. So they're kind of like the Infinity Stones, where each one has an ability. I don't think we're going to get that specific with the Ten Rings here. They're more of like wrist bracelet gauntlets than rings on fingers. I'm okay with that. I'm going to be honest. Like, we already got a fake Mandarin once. And I'm a big fan of like the Mandarin story with Tony Stark in comics that was coming out in like 2012. And I'm okay. Like, does anybody have a problem with that? I don't think anybody.
I don't. I think it looks so much neater to just have them be wrist gauntlets, because it's like, I cannot imagine trying to choreograph a fight scene if someone has 10 rings on their hand. Like, that just seems very clunky. So I don't mind the change. I think it looks really cool, as we saw in the trailer, of like those action sequences just look really compelling. So I don't know what they're going to do with like the lore behind them and how they all work, but I think the way that they're presenting them like really makes sense in live action.
I immediately think about when they announced this, that part from Spider-Man 3 where he loses the engagement ring and like is trying to grab it back. And I'm like, is that just going to be what a lot of these, one of these a movie with like, you know, Peter Parker or somebody trying to get it back in the middle of all this chaos? But yeah, I think visually it just leads more understanding for the viewer at a distance if it's these bigger objects than if it's like, you know, just a little thing or whatever. Also, I don't even know if we're going to see them be separated. Mm-hmm. We don't even know yet if they're going to, like, you know, because I guess in other media, they make a big thing of having to find all of them, right? I don't know if we're going to do that because we already kind of did that with the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think it's just going to be a thing they already have. I want to shout out people in the comments are following the Twitch account, Wanda's Loki and FR Scope. Appreciate y'all following the comic book Twitch. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I've heard a lot of cool theories about the rings themselves as far as why they're the size that they are. I mean, one of those is that it's possible that these were actually the size of ring fingers for dragons, which would be cool. And that's why they're that size. There's also, you know, in the comics, the rings actually are powered by the souls of dead, like warriors, like cosmic warriors. So there's going to be, I think there's a lot of possibility for some cool backstory for, you know, when they explain what these rings do and where they come from.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a lot of history from this so quickly early in the movie, and you'll understand why they mean so much to Wenwu, who's played by Tony Leung, who's supposedly the real Mandarin, and why it would be so offensive to him that Trevor Slattery and Aldrich Killian had this alternate fake Mandarin who was supposed to like kind of act like him. I would love it if this movie just starts with him like just killing Aldrich Killian for the offense to kind of Thanos it in Infinity War, to do the Negan where you have to set up your villain and how powerful and ruthless they are. Imagine if we get Guy Pearce movie for like a minute and he just gets killed by the Ten Rings to show their power and how serious this guy is.
Or Trevor. What if he just kills Trevor?
Oh, listen, he didn't know what he was getting into. Trevor Slattery is a king, okay? I have one theory I want to throw out there and hear your thoughts. What if this movie is set during the blip? Like, why? The only time we heard of Abomination since The Incredible Hulk was in a one-shot attached to a Blu-ray. I think these count as canon, where Coulson shot down the possibility of Abomination joining the Avengers. He said he's going to send in Tony Stark to talk Thaddeus Ross out of that. Clearly it worked. And 13 years later, now we have Abomination back. He escaped a prison in Alaska and ended up somewhere, maybe Madripoor, Southeast Asia. Is it set during the blip? I think that'd be a cool territory of time to explore.
Was Wong in the blip?
Wong didn't,
said, really, because he went, like, he left after they were fighting in New York, like when they were fighting parts of the Black Order. So we just didn't see him for the rest of the movie. So, like, I have honestly believed for a while that this could be during the blip, because that seems like the perfect time to kind of let Shang-Chi grow as a hero. And so that way, when we do get to like the next Avengers movie or whatever his next appearance is, he's kind of like at his peak form and he's already gone through his origin story. And so, like, having Wong in there too, it's like, yeah, this just kind of confirms that he was alive the whole time. And it's like, without Stephen Strange, what else is he going to do? I guess he's just going to go like get into cage matches and stuff because he has nothing better to do, really.
Yeah, exactly. That was my next point. He doesn't have the Sorcerer Supreme there anymore. What's he doing? He's not far away from a half.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Fight. I'd love to hear from the comments. And if you're listening in podcast form, send us some tweets. Send us your Shang-Chi reactions and theories. I love hearing from you guys. Honestly, like, people have been commenting on Instagram lately, like any post, and they're just like, can't wait to hear Phase Zero today. So I want to thank, first of all, our listeners for being so awesome and supportive, but also like you guys on the show, Jenna, Chris, Aaron, Jamie, who's not here today, Jim, who's in the comment section right now. Like, this is very much a team effort of a show. So obviously we're nothing without the listeners and the viewers who support the show, but you guys who come on here and make it fun for everybody, I appreciate y'all. The Black Widow reviews hit. You've heard from me on Black Widow already. You have not heard from Jenna, who got to see it. So I want to give Jenna an opportunity. I'm going to pull up some of the reviews that are like the snippets in Rotten Tomatoes to get some outside sources. But Jenna, I want to give you an opportunity to share your thoughts on the movie.
I loved it. I was so much more than I was expecting. I expected to enjoy it, but the amount at which I like really, really loved it genuinely took me by surprise. Sitting on my couch watching the screener, I got the feeling of being in an IMAX theater, like watching it with a huge group of people. Like I got that level of just hype. And I'm trying to think of what to really say without really saying anything. I'm already looking forward to talking about it on the show once it actually comes out, because I feel like there's so much to unpack there. But like the cast is so excellent. Like it is so much fun just watching them just sit and talk to each other. Like they make even the most mundane setup for a scene really, really compelling. And I just think what they do for Natasha's story is so meaningful in a way that like I have this newfound appreciation for her character. I already loved her, but it's like she now might be one of my favorite characters in the MCU with like the way that they dealt with her. So I am so excited for everybody else to see it because it honestly blew me away.
It's so bittersweet that they make you fall in love with Natasha so much more in this movie. And then we know that this is like, she's taken away from us already. Like, it's like, she should have had this treatment years ago. It's very frustrating that she didn't, but I agree with you. It made me like, I went on and ordered the Hot Toys figure for Black Widow because I don't have one. And I was like, I need to have one. I love this movie. And it gets here tomorrow. I can't wait. But I thought the movie was like best in its moments that were grounded and emotional in the family. And the third act gets a little not grounded anymore and gets kind of crazy. And that was the only real criticism I have. But the VFX there were kind of loose. But overall, like, I just think the movie was so good. I put it up there, not as good as, but there, it's up there just short of the conversation for me, Iron Man, Winter Soldier, Ragnarok, Black Panther. Like, it's better than Iron Man 2 and 3, Cap 1, like those solo films. Both of the Ant-Man, I would put this above a lot of movies, solo films. Here are some of the snippets on the reviews from Rotten Tomatoes' top critics. Brian Tellerico of RogerEbert.com says, it makes sense that a no-nonsense killing machine like Black Widow should have a no-nonsense installment, but it's nice to see it actually happen. I think that's, we all agree with that. Dana Stevens, positive review from Slate. I think I can say for the first time in years about a Marvel property that the next chapter can't come soon enough. Somebody wants more Yelena. Perry Nemiroff, huge fan of Perry Nemiroff. She said this on YouTube. Black Widow meets the immense challenge of enhancing the past and future of the character while also functioning as a full experience in and of itself. Totally agree with that. It felt like this movie could have been written off as like a, we're just getting a Black Widow movie because we never got one. And it very much serves its own purpose. Philip D. Semlian of Time Out said, a satisfying mix of muscle and emotion. Oh, we have a negative review from Tim Grierson at Screen International. Black Widow seems like a missed opportunity, an energetic placeholder in the MCU, but meant to tide audiences over until a bigger, richer adventure comes along. I think if that's your mentality, you're going to dislike movies like Shang-Chi as well, because they're not all going to be Endgame. We got the huge Endgame. Now we need to, like, we're also going to get some.
I felt like Black Widow was Endgame for Natasha and her family. Like, the spectacle that it brings while still having a relatively small cast and, like, stakes that are not as massive as Thanos. It's like, I feel like we're going to get to a point where every movie that is in the MCU is going to feel Endgame-esque. And then, like, the Disney Plus shows are going to feel more like a normal MCU movie. But, I don't know. Anyone who's expecting that much of a spectacle in every single movie is probably going to be disappointed. We can't have Endgame all the time.
Yep, I totally agree. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever started production yesterday, I believe it was, on Tuesday. Earlier this week in Atlanta, and Kevin Feige spoke at a Black Widow fan event just last night, and he said it's clearly very emotional without Chad, but everyone is also very excited to bring the world of Wakanda back to the public and back to the fans. We're going to do it in a way that would make Chad proud. This one's never not going to hurt. It's just, I don't know what more you can say, but, I have heard some really exciting stuff about Black Panther, about a character that is in it. I'm working to get that confirmed so I can say it out loud, but, so just stay tuned. But does anybody, you know, how do you guys feel about Black Panther going into production? Like it's just never not going to hurt and have like this feeling about it, but we want to celebrate it. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't spot right there. I mean, so I'm excited to see how they handle Chadwick and what they're going to do with that. But I mean, yeah, like you said, bittersweet. What else can you say about it? It sucks all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah.
BD, when you put that image up from your backyard yesterday from that part of Endgame when he walks through the portal, it caught me and it made me sad. And I was like, it's been a long time now and I'm still really, really sad. I can't even like see his face on anything and not feel like a little bit of emotion. So I don't know how I'm going to sit through this 2-hour movie.
It's just like, I watched Endgame last night. I took a picture of the moment where Chadwick walks out of the portals and I just tweeted it and I wrote, damn man, ... because I just like, it just like hits you every time. Like that it's just so hard that he's not here anymore. Like this is somebody most of us have never even met. And I mean that like these Marvel movies were just, I don't know, obviously for us four here, it's such a part of our life. It's our career to, you know, talk about these things, but I just like these things transcend just being fun and entertainment. Like we go to dinner with family, you get in an Uber or you talk about trailers online. You're just having conversations about this stuff. You're talking about the actors, you're talking about the characters. And that's one that's just never going to be easier.
And I know this is a Marvel podcast, but I mean, the closest thing that I can maybe even connect it to would probably be Heath Ledger's Joker. Right. And that's been like 12 years now, something like that. And it still hurts for that. I mean, because it's just this, you know, unfulfilled potential that, you know, they had plans for him in the third movie and all, you know, we never got to see that fulfilled. And that's just, it just sucks to think of what we missed out on with Chadwick, you know, leaving so soon.
Yeah. The entire world like missed out, like what he would have done on screen and off screen for the world is tough. We got to move on. There's no easy way to transition out of this. So I got to just jump into the next thing. Nebula will be bonkers, quote, in Thor: Love and Thunder. Karen Gillan did an interview with Collider. She said, Taika really brought out the bonkers side. I think everyone is just really, really funny and bonkers and wild. I don't know if it's personal levity. Like, I don't think she's finding herself funny or being funny, but in her seriousness, I think we will find her funny and just the pure aggression that we've tapped into. And quote, I spared you all of my Irish accent of Karen Gillan. I'll do Tom Holland all day. I'll try to throw Loki at you. Maybe Christopher Walken.
But every Karen episode Gillan, is just the accent challenge. It's just you just trying on a new accent.
There's always one. And I feel like that's all there is to say about that. And then the last thing is the WandaVision post-credit scene before we move on to Loki. So if you're unfamiliar with this somehow, WandaVision, on the same week that the report came out there will be no physical media for Disney Plus shows, WandaVision changed its post-credit scene because they can do that because it's streaming and you can't have it unless you illegally download it all. So it's non-existent if they change it. They just changed some trees and took a little piece of a light out in the cabin in the end credit scene of WandaVision, and there was an error in the VFX and it looked like there was like a little entity floating down from the top left corner of the screen towards the cabin, but it was just a little blurred out spot that was part of a VFX thing that stayed in the same place. And because the camera was getting closer, it looked like it was moving closer. I don't know how I feel about this, that they changed stuff. Like there could already have been other changes.
Mm-hmm.
Give me physical media.
Exactly. It's so weird. Like just this precedent of streaming stuff. I understand the desire to change it. I get that they probably were matching the scene more to what is in Multiverse of Madness. So it's like that from that aspect, I could theoretically understand, but it's been months since the finale aired. Nobody is really paying attention. So Aaron's laughing at someone in the chat.
I think Aaron saw Kofi's comment. Kofi, go ahead, Aaron. Share with the class.
I don't want to cut off Jenna. Jenna, do you want to finish?
No, this is weird precedent. Like I was listening to another podcast a couple months ago that talked about like how Disney Plus did the weird censorship for Splash and how weird that was. And they were like, is this now going to be a thing where if you get Splash on physical media, is it also going to have that? Or is it a thing of like, this is the only way you can consume this movie going forward? So it's just so weird having this really innocuous thing in WandaVision and then having it be human shaped enough to where we could all just think it was Doctor Stranger Vision for a second, even though it definitely isn't.
I
think that just having these changes happen on streaming services anyways, where now they have the ability to go kind of secretly edit things and putting them back and maybe we don't notice. I mean, eventually, like, I know people, like a lot of Star Wars fans get mad about Star Wars being changed and things like that, you know, 30 years later. So I just wonder how long it's going to take till the technology catches up where, like, one day we turn on Incredible Hulk and Edward Norton has been replaced with Mark Ruffalo or something like crazy like that. I mean, there's no telling, but they're always just trying to match these things. And that's going to be fun.
This is chaos. This is unadulterated chaos. Chris, I never considered that. That is something that could absolutely possibly happen in the future in this terrible place we find ourselves in.
Yeah, we're going to find that Don Cheadle is Terrence Howard.
Oh. In Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
In Iron Man 1.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
For those of you who don't know what Kofi is talking about in the comments, so in the earlier days of Kanye West, he released this album called Life of Pablo, and within a week, he edited it 8 times. There are 8 different versions of it on the internet. You can see people cataloged how he changed the mixes. He would add and change notes. He put things up in the mix, down in the mix. Songs would sound different. It's the source of one of my favorite out-of-context tweets of all time, which is, I'ma fix wolves. Because if some alien civilization found that tweet later, they'd be like, what was going on with these people? Like, why did wolves be fixing? What's going on? So that sort of stuff making its way to these streaming shows is super strange. Like, because you guys are right. Like, there's going to be a time where we wake up and someone's not paying attention, and you're not going to know that this was different before. Unless someone's cataloging it, and it'll be a fan project to catalog it. So
yeah, and unless it's really like one of these key scenes that finds itself uploaded to YouTube, like how are we going to notice? How can you even tell? You can't. You have nothing to compare it to. But yeah, so that's kind of weird. Not even Twitter has an edit button, but WandaVision can change scenes. So well, there it is. But all right, we're going to take a real quick break, and in a moment, we're going to talk all about Loki episode 4. Let the mischief begin.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Phase Zero episode 25 continues right now with Loki episode 4, full spoilers. Jenna Anderson, Chris Killian, and Aaron Preen are here to break it down with us. And we got to go with reactions first. You know I like to go top to bottom on the screen that you can't see in podcast form, but you see it if you make it to the live show on Twitch. Jenna, what did you think of today's episode?
I really liked it from a lot of levels, and I'm really excited to dive into those aspects. There's one bit that I almost took umbrage with, but I'm starting to come around to. But I don't want to really talk about it like in the initial part, but like the episode had a lot of it that I really, really loved. And then the very, very end, the mid-credits scene absolutely blew me away. Like I leapt off the couch when I saw that. So I'm just so excited for where the next two episodes are going to go, because the playing field that we're on right now is just insane.
Chris, what'd you think?
Mixed emotions, man. Mixed emotions. I felt angry because you just gave me Owen Wilson only to take him away. You know, I was really frustrated by that, but that end credit scene sort of saved it all. I'm very, very happy to know that that these guys aren't getting like blipped out of existence when this wand touches them. I'm happy to know they're going somewhere. And that end credit scene really just, oh man, seeing Richard E. Grant as classic Loki just was like, ah, this is great. And I can't tell if that alligator slash crocodile is a pet or if that's another Loki. I don't know, because he had the horns, so.
it's got to have a name, like
Croc Loki. No, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no easy way to combine the words alligator and Loki into one name, but we'll figure it out. Aaron, what'd you think?
It was a lot of fun. Just a lot of wild twists and turns. I think that this series is more similar to WandaVision in the fact that there's no way for us to really guess completely what's going to come after this. And it felt like Falcon and the Soldier, you felt it naturally building to something like, okay, there's going to be this competition. No idea what's going on. No idea. They're androids. Sif is here. it was totally cool. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting time. Also, amazing Brenda Lee drop at the end. I was like, wow, that's real dope. Mm-hmm. Song from like 1960. Insane.
I am loving the comment section.
I know.
Saying
Croaky.
Loki Gator. Croaky. Croaky is the real popular one.
Croc
Loki is the superior Loki. Ally Loki, Loki Gator. A Loki, Loki Dial. I like Loki Dial and Croaky a lot. I like this episode a lot. You guys, this is going to come as no surprise because we've all been doing this for a while now, and I feel like I'm getting predictable. I'm frustrated that there's still no episode 2 cliffhanger payoff. Like, was it just resolved? Did we get a third multiverse pump fake? Like, Far From Home lied to us. WandaVision pulled the fake Pietro crap. And then this launched a multiverse on a screen and then just undid it before it happened. So, like, are we just going to, like, at this point, is Doctor Strange, like, all a lie? Is there even a multiverse? Or is it just the madness? Is the audience being mad that there is no multiverse? No, obviously we're getting into the multiverse, but I thought this episode was super tense throughout. I really love the tension. I don't know if any of it is, like, real. Like it, or at some point, whether it was in episode 3 or maybe when they touched and created the Nexus event, that it became an enchantment. We'll talk about all that. But yeah, I thought it was a good episode. I liked it more than last week's. It's my second favorite episode overall. Episode 2 is still my favorite. And yeah, so I do want to pull up producer Richard, who watched the show today. And we got to get his thoughts. I've been teasing this for so long. Richard, unmute yourself. What did you think of the episode?
I loved it, man. I loved especially the ending. You know, I'm a big Star Wars guy. So like when Loki and Sylvia were fighting, it kind of gave me vibes to where Kylo Ren and Rey were fighting after Snoke, you know, died or whatnot. So I'm enjoying it. It's funny. It's making me care about Loki because usually I don't care that much about the character, but now I'm really interested in the story and like just where all this is going. So I've been enjoying it a lot, man.
The Wizard of Oz, as Kofi just called him in the comment section. Richard Adams, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your thoughts. I've been telling you for weeks, one of these days I'm going to put you on the spot, and you just crushed it. I think you just took my job.
I think
the people are going to want more and more Richard. Thanks, brother. All right, so now we're going to get into the breakdown of it all. It started in Asgard. Young Sylvie is played by Kaylee Fleming, who you might recognize as Judith from The Walking Dead. I think that's really cool. She's also young Rey. You mentioned Star Wars, so she's young Rey in The Force Awakens. The toys she's playing with, they're the dragon from Ragnarok, I think, or like one of those types of dragons. I don't know if there's multiple. She's playing with a Valkyrie, and there was a little wolf there, which is probably a nod to Fenris with Hela and stuff. And Asgard looked a little different. I did a side-by-side comparison. I'll put this in a video that's coming out on the comicbook.com YouTube channel later today. So I think this is just a whole alternate timeline, and maybe Sylvie's just important to this in one way or another. Like, what, Jenna, what do you think?
I've started to think like something similar. Like, that kind of gets into my one beef with the episode, which was the way that they have evolved Loki and Sylvie's relationship. Kind of, I didn't know how to feel about it as I was watching the episode because they haven't really outlined how similar or how different they are from each other. Like, they haven't really said, are they the same person? Do they have the same DNA or not? Or are they from completely different timelines or realities? I think we're supposed to believe that they are, but like, that hasn't been really said, confirmed. And so I was like, I definitely am wanting to believe that she's from an alternate timeline because that would make the most sense with the direction that they're going.
like what just caused her to just be born a girl and cause this whole crazy different scenario, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't I see Chris's wheels are turning. He's got the brows are, they're tight. I see him.
I have so many thoughts about this episode. I mean, one thing is that, you know, it's a crazy episode when we get an appearance from Lady Sif and we haven't even brought that up yet.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
You know, mm-hmm. But I don't know. I knew the timekeepers were going to be fake. I don't know if that's a very popular theory or not, but I just had a feeling that they were going to be fake. And so I'm still curious about who's running that. If not the timekeepers, then who's the one that's doing all of this? I really got no guess outside of, Mephisto. So...
Damn it, Chris.
Here we go again.
But yeah, so in that conversation on Lamentous One, right before it all goes down, Loki says they're survivors. Obviously they are. Loki has like fake died like 100 times now. And Sylvie touches him. And it seems like, did they form a bond and a love that created this Nexus event? Or did an enchantment start? And everything from that point is just fake. I don't know. I don't trust anybody. But first, before we talk about this any further, I posed this question to Sophia DiMartino, and we have a clip of it. So, Richard, if you will, roll the clip. I interviewed Tom, and he said episodes 4 and 5 are the real gut punch episodes where things start to get really crazy. I'd love to hear from you. Which episode do you think is going to be the one where everybody really gets people talking?
I mean, they each have something about them, especially from now on. I love 3 because obviously I get to do a lot of like fighting and cool stuff like that. And you really get to know Loki and Sylvie and their dynamic. And so I've really enjoyed watching that and I loved filming it as well. I mean, 4 and 5 are also awesome. 6 is going to be great as well. It's really hard to choose.
Fair enough. No one want to pick a favorite child there.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that there's going to be one of those enchantments that's happening and the audience doesn't know it's happening. And a lot of it is a big illusion. Am I onto something? Are you about to fool us? You about to pull one over on us?
I don't know. What you mean, like there's something happening the audience doesn't know and then you find out that it was all a big...
I think you might trick Loki and us. And you might be onto something there. All right.
No, I can't really say too much. Just keep watching and, you know, just see. You'll see if you're right.
Do you guys think there's any possibility? Like, Aaron, do you think any of this is fake or really, which side of this do you fall on?
Oh God. It's like, are we living in a simulation is what you just asked me. God. I think it's real. I don't know. Like it seemed pretty real. The thing that makes me think that all of this isn't just occurring, like, or like the last episode or whatever, isn't just this enchantment thing, is that when they actually in the ending in the post credit scene, there's a detail in it that I'm like, okay, this is actually like a real thing. There's no way that we're not going to talk about it. And I will save that little detail for when we talk about it in a second.
It a phase zero veteran. Mm-hmm. Jim Viscardi, you're watching. Take notes. Jim Viscardi loves to jump ahead. Jim Viscardi loves to skip to the end of the show. Chris, what do you think? Which side of this are you on? There's some of it's fake or it's all real?
It's really hard to say. I think with Loki, you can't really trust anything anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of going to plead the 5th on it. I don't know either. I don't want to look stupid one way or the other. I'm just going to let
it unfold. That's our job. Listen, we love it.
I know. I see the comments that you get on your theory videos. I'm just going to moonwalk out of this one.
Jenna, what do you think? I'm making everybody weigh in.
I think it's real. I think if you added that extra twist of like, it's all a virtual reality simulation and none of it was real, I feel like that kind of cheapens a lot of the good character moments that we saw in this episode. The thing that has kind of turned me around to Loki and Sylvie's dynamic and the fact that it is almost romantic, I still read it as very platonic, but I get that they're trying to push it as like romantic-ish, is that like there was a quote from Michael Waldron on Marvel.com where he was basically like, this is a love story about Loki accepting himself and loving himself. And so like the way that he's doing that is through another physical manifestation of himself. And so I think that the Nexus event that they caused was really just Loki starting to accept himself and what he could be, and like seeing Sylvie as the epitome of that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if it is romantic, you do you, bro.
I know. Literally. That's also what kind of frustrated me about it, was that like we got confirmation that they both were bi last week. And then it's like we immediately go into you're having a relationship with yourself, and like Mobius calls it like gross and like problematic and stuff like that. And so I was kind of frustrated of like, this is a lot of general audience members' first like canon bisexual representation. And then you're immediately going to undercut it with this weird like self-cest. And so I hope that that's not the direction that we go in, because I feel like the show has been so smart already that they're hopefully going to do something different. But that initially, as I was sitting there, I was like, I don't know how to feel about this. This isn't what I wanted. There's so many better ways to represent your characters in this way than that. So, yeah.
I actually loved that, though. I really enjoyed that aspect of it, that like Owen Wilson's explanation that like, of course, you're so narcissistic that the one person you've fallen in love with is another version of yourself. I thought that was really well done. And it explains Loki to a T. I mean, just as somebody who just thinks that he is the best thing that's ever, you know, been created, I loved it. I thought it made him even more layered than he already was after episode 3.
And we also need to just be careful here, because this is still the Loki who betrayed his brother, mm-hmm. like 20 minutes ago, and just 10 minutes ago failed invading New York City. Like, he might still be actually really evil and just playing a game here the whole time. So he might not be in love with anybody. It might all be just Loki being Loki. Sif is back. That was awesome. She last appeared, Jamie Alexander as Sif, last appeared on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which, you know, the debate rages on. Still no updates whether or not that's canon. If Kevin Feige considers it canon, we know where a lot of the fans consider it, but we don't know if Marvel Studios is going to embrace it. But other than that, she was in Thor: The Dark World. And I think this is a cool nod, because we've mentioned on the show how the Lady Loki body was intended to be a body for Sif after Ragnarok in comics. And then Loki took it. And the whole Loki cutting her hair just for gigs was a bit from comics and Norse mythology. So that's just a fun bit. I don't know. Do you think there's anything more to say about Sif being there other than it was just cool to see her? Jenna, what you see?
I remember there were rumors while this was filming that like Sif was going to show up, and I completely forgot about them. And so when she showed up in this episode and in this kind of like Groundhog Day context, it was like, all right, cool. This is the best possible way to use her without raising a lot of questions about like, is she still alive? Did like, what's going on? How did she end up in the TVA? So I thought like they used her in a way that was really interesting while also paying homage to Norse mythology. So it was like, that was just a nice little detail.
Yeah. Damon streams with the comment. This is the important question that I have. If Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is canon, does that make Inhumans canon? And I genuinely like, I think the only reason that this hasn't been acknowledged is because they would have to acknowledge that. Like, you can just cherry pick pieces of Marvel TV mm-hmm. that you want to use and leave out the rest. But I don't know. I don't know. That's a whole different conversation.
I still have my theory that the Inhumans, like the Inhumans show, is just an actual show in the MCU. And that's how we just get past it and just move on. Because it's like, that is the only way.
That's the equivalent to reality TV.
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah, Inhumans, like I would love to see an actual Black Bolt. Like, it wasn't Anson Mount's fault, you know, that show was just never going to be good. Mobius and B-15 caught on to the fact that they are variants. Do you think like this is the first time Mobius has caught on? Do you think the rings detail is actually going to mean something or be meaningless like some of the other details we overthought about?
I don't know. I believed that this was the first time he caught on, but I never occurred, like, it never occurred to me that he could have already maybe figured it out.
Like, what if wherever he went, he's just with like 100 other Mobiuses? Like, he just like, when you see him wake up like Loki did in the post credit scene, and he's just like, wow. Like, it'll be like his wow moment, like the mine seagulls in Finding Nemo, but instead of saying mine. Wow.
One of them needs to be a tiny cowboy. That's the only thing I would
yes. yes. Chris, what were you going
to
say?
That's exactly what I was going to say. It needs to be every version of Owen Wilson we've ever seen. Just a Hutch from Starsky and Hutch, and Owen from Wedding Crashers, just every all of them surrounding him. That would be fantastic.
It's just a jet ski show in like Tampa or something, and all of them are like, wow, that's a really good one over there. That was amazing. Look at that. Yeah, that was red.
I do think, though, that this is probably, like, to seriously answer the question, I believe this is probably the first time that he's realized this, because if the show's already complicated enough, so if we start thinking outside of that and that there are hundreds of versions of Mobius who's figured this out, my mind will melt. I can't even begin to comprehend that happening. So if the TVA is kind of outside of time, then I'd like, you know, there's no real time loop within that. I don't know. I think it's the one time it's ever happened. I'm gonna stick to that.
Maybe. I mean, but I don't think he's dead. So
no.
I think there
No, we, I don't think you know? He's dead. I was very upset. I mean, I was distraught. I was so distraught that they killed Owen Wilson that when I thought they'd killed Loki, I didn't even care. I was just shell-shocked.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It was just, you took out all of my emotional energy that I had. The tank is empty. You killed Owen Wilson. I had nothing left.
Mm-hmm. Also, shout out to the chat because they keep mentioning Lightning McQueen. I'm like, that needs to be in the Council of Owen Wilson.
Oh, they own it. Yes. Disney owns it. They can do it. They can do it. Ka-chow. I did look up because there was the moment where he looks at the pen again in Ravonna's office, and Franklin D. Roosevelt High School, there's three of them in the country. One is in Buck County, Pennsylvania. One's in Brooklyn, New York, and one is in Dallas, Texas. I think Mobius kind of strikes me as a Texas guy. Like, he could just drive on down to Galveston and get on a jet ski. Buck County, PA, I don't know much about it. In Brooklyn, I don't know if there's anybody in Brooklyn who owns a jet ski. Like, why would you? So, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be relevant, but I looked it up just for the sake of being thorough, you know? And he also said, when he's talking to B-15, Mobius said, we've captured Kree, Titans, and vampires. So Kree, obviously, we saw them in Captain Marvel, and Ronan is a Kree, right? And then Titans, that's Thanos and the people from his planet of Titan. But vampires, this is the first time that we had a mention of, like, a reference to Blade. And if you ask Tyrese, Morbius.
So, see, my brain went to Moon Knight, because I know people are theorizing that Dracula's the villain of Moon Knight. So I was like, maybe there's a connection to that, too. So I was more just like, yes, vampires finally exist. Like, this is just such a cool little thing to sprinkle in there.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I got to say that Marvel's ability to leave breadcrumbs for future projects is just, it's brilliant. It's just amazing. Every time I'm like, they know what they're doing. I don't even know why. We should just stop talking about it. Just let them do their thing.
It straight up took me back to Iron Man 2. When he asked Jarvis to pull up files on Project Pegasus, Goliath, and Exodus. I don't know if it was in that order, but I think then that was just an accident, but they've now picked up on how to plant those seeds. Like, Pegasus turned out to be NASA and SHIELD investigating the Tesseract. We saw it in Captain Marvel. Goliath turned out to be Bill Foster, which was the one that we obviously assume Goliath is going to be Bill Foster, but we didn't learn that until Ant-Man and the Wasp. And we still haven't learned Exodus. Some people think it's the Fantastic Four, and some people is me. So, the Timekeepers, they got snoked.
Mm-hmm.
They got snoked straight up. They were fake. They were frauds. They were created by something else. And a more powerful being is pulling the strings behind the curtain, and they got chopped by a flying blade. I mean, literally, they got snoked. Like, what? Who wants to fill us in on their thoughts
I just want to say, for the record, if they don't add animatronics of those guys to Avengers Campus, then like that is a missed opportunity, because those are the best Disney animatronics I've ever seen. Like, how well those robots came together. I still think it is either Kang or Immortus, which is the older version of Kang, because that I knew from the get-go. I was like, the Timekeepers are going to be a Wizard of Oz situation. So I'm still under the theory that it is some version of Kang.
Aaron, what do you think?
I think it probably is going to be some older version of Kang, probably two now. But it was such an early swerve. I didn't think we were going to get rid of the Timekeepers as like robots or whatever, or illusions, until like the second to last episode. And they got they got dealt with very, very quickly. And it seems as though Ravonna knows more about what's going on than she let on in so many different ways. Poor Mobius and Sylvie, like, do you remember what the Nexus event that caused you to ruin my life was? And her being like smiling and saying no, I'm like, oh God, she knows everything. And then as it like goes into this very Kavinsky music video looking chamber where they are, I was just like, this is all Wizard of Oz. Like Jenna said, I'm like, okay. So Richard's going to be back there pulling the strings behind everything.
It's Richard. It is our producer, Richard. Our producer
Richard.
Behind the TVA. Richard, way to go, man. I love that. Chris.
I got to jump in on this. Obviously, Kang is the popular answer, but just I'm going to do a couple different takes of different people. So I have it on record. If it's not Kang, I'm going to just go ahead. So I think it's I definitely think it's Mephisto, but it could be a variant version of Thanos. I don't think that any of us have considered that Thanos might just be. Hold on, let me finish. It's a variant version of Thanos. It's Doctor Doom. We all know it's Doctor Doom. I mean, come on, they're setting up the Fantastic Four.
Duh.
Okay, I'm done.
But what I mean, you missed one, that it is Loki.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, I was saving one for you, though.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's a softball lob I just did there.
I can't wait to cut out Chris's snippet where he was right. And we could say his first time on Phase Zero, he predicted the end of Loki. And now the last thing we're going to talk about before we answer a few questions from the live comment section, make sure you're following the channel so you can join us live. It's twitch.tv/comicbook, by the way. There's four Lokis at the end of the post credit scene. We kind of touched on this a little bit. Alligator Loki, Croaky, Crocodile Loki, whatever you want to call him. Kid Loki, straight out of the comics. Richard E. Grant Loki, which is like classic old Loki. And the Loki on the left, which was credited as Boastful Loki, is clearly worthy of some version of Thor's hammer Mjolnir. And if you look in the background, you see Avengers Tower all kind of crumbled and damaged and stuff. So this is some version of 2012, in or around 2012, after Tony Stark built Avengers Tower. Jenna, what's up?
See, I think that the Avengers Tower was just like pruned out of an alternate reality. I think that everything we're going to see around there is just like, this is just like the dump, basically, for the TVA. Of like anything we prune just goes there. So it's like, oh, Loki, it's like, oh, in this alternate universe, the Avengers Tower got crumbled to crap, so we're just gonna like prune it, and it's all because the way that that world looks and the way that it looked in the trailer, there's just a lot of stuff stacked on top of each other. So it's like, and I know there was like one TV spot that had like the pyramids of Giza, and so my thinking is just like, this is just the TVA's like infinite storage in limbo, and so all of the people and things that they prune are just stuck in this void that doesn't really have a time or place.
I like that a lot. And Casually Cosplaying agrees with you in the comment section saying, or maybe it's every pruned reality.
Yeah.
Which is an extension of what you were saying. I mean, but that would mean that Mobius is there. Aaron, were you about to say something?
I was just thinking that they would use, if you were to devise a afterlife, a like very, very bad afterlife for a Loki, it would be one where they succeeded in the Battle of New York, but you never get to live through any of the spoils of that war. Cause you know, Thanos was like, oh yeah, you can have Earth. Surprise. It's terrible. And there's nothing here. And it's like weird stacked on top of each other, garbage, and have fun with your crocodile friend and that kid and the old guy and a dude from Game of Thrones. So I think it probably is like a weird like public storage situation where this is where we keep all the castaway stuff. But that's another weird thing, I guess, in their theory of everything, where I feel like that's a giant, giant loophole that no one seemed to think was a giant loophole beforehand, just like hiding in the apocalypses is. You're going to send all of them together to one place where they can talk about everything and possibly hatch a scheme, which is all Lokis do is scheme to get out of it. It seems like asking for trouble.
I love this comment from Abode H572. I think the Avengers Tower was part of restoring the timeline where a Nexus event happened in 2012. This could mean Ravonna, who I don't trust at all, was lying in that first episode when she said the Avengers did what they were supposed to do. Maybe as soon as the Avengers got done in that new 2012 where Loki left, they just pruned that whole city. Like that.
I was thinking about the whole Avengers thing and how, like, after the first episode, we were all like, why didn't they stop Steve Rogers? Why didn't they do all this stuff? They're basically just kidnapping people. So it's like, in their mind, why would we kidnap the Avengers and cause, like, a huge public stir and potentially cause the timeline to go just, like, go off the rails? So it's like, instead, we're going to kidnap the people that, like, you don't necessarily notice that they're gone. So, like, I definitely believe that it's something along those lines of, like, the Battle of New York has happened countless times over, and they've just pruned whatever parts of it that they don't like.
I think the reality here is we need to just temper our expectations. we do this every week, and I love having fun with it, but I think, yeah, to some extent, like, when I started talking about my reaction to today's episode, is that we build up these huge events that we want these implications to the entire MCU and the history of the MCU. And the truth of these Disney Plus shows is they have just been character-driven studies of their choices and events, and which have been great, especially in WandaVision. And I feel like WandaVision got the most flack for not having Doctor Strange and not having the multiverse and all this stuff, even though it was a fantastic show. So... yeah. If anybody has any questions in the comment section, go ahead and drop those in now, because we're about to start wrapping it up here. Chris, anything you want to throw at us to start wrapping us up?
All I know is that if we're going to see classic Loki, I want to see classic Thor. I want to see some old classic Thor in the maybe they can just give Vincent D'Onofrio for it from Adventures in Babysitting.
Well, over under, like, what percent chance do you think we get a Thor appearance?
Under zero. I'm just trying to temper expectations as well, but that's what I want to see.
Casually Cosplaying asks, do you think Loki or Sylvie will make it out of this, or both? Chris, you're up first. You think they both survive?
Yeah, I think they're gonna, well, maybe not both of them, but one of them will survive. We're not going to have an MCU without some version of Loki.
Probably not. Do we think any Loki will make it to our timeline? I guess that's kind of the same question. Is Matt Damon Loki going to be a variant? and the Matt Damon question comes from Damon Streams. How fitting. That would be hilarious, honestly.
Yes.
But I don't know if Matt Damon's going to pop into the Disney Plus show.
See, now that we have Alligator Loki or Croaky, I'm like, I just want Throg. Because I'm like, that has to be the Loki from that universe where, like, they're all animals. Because I'm like, can we just at least make that happen if we don't have an actual human Thor? Because that just feels like something that they would be willing to throw in there.
Throg and Croaky would be legendary together, and I would watch them go to the watering hole for hours. Abode again with another question. Doctor Strange cameo in the last episode. I don't anticipate that, to be honest. I don't see it happening. I think that we all have these, maybe, but I don't know. More than Doctor Strange, I just want to see a montage of Mobius's life and learn his real name, because it's probably not Mobius M. Mobius, just like B-15's name is not B-15. And I just want to see him selling jet skis for a living. Just owning a jet ski store. He has all of them. He's all of them. Chris, what's Mobius's real name?
Eminem.
Marshall. If his name was Marshall. a couple more questions here. Can Loki have kids after getting kicked between the legs that many times? I don't know.
I think if Loki could have kids based on, he is a hedonistic god that's like thousands of years old. He's probably got some floating out there if he can have them.
Maybe. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up Phase Zero. We started talking about Loki, getting the balls kicked out of him. So that's going to wrap up episode 25. I hate that that's our ending. do you think we'll be blessed with multiple Mobiuses / Owen Wilsons in this new reality? I hope so. And I hope they get to live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. That's it. We all agree. Mobius deserves the world. He's a king and we want him to have it. That's today's show. Summit Lake Hornet, you got anything to send us out?
I do. Hold on one second.
Oh boy.
We got a special surprise here coming up on the show.
While we were all discussing what Loki's actual, like what to name the crocodile one.
Uh-huh.
I went ahead and I'll post this on Twitter at Summit Lake Hornet for all of you to see. But I think I captured the general vibe pretty well.
Oh my god. Loki dial variant.
I love it.
There you go. Thank you.
Croaky. Well done. Croaky is our new supreme
John,
leader.
John Malkovich runs the TVA. You hear it here first.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to spare you of a John Malkovich impression. Chris, before I start impersonating John Malkovich as a timekeeper,
no, stop right there.
What do you want to send us off with? Any last words?
No, just thanks for having me, man. It was a real pleasure, and we didn't get into a single fight on this show, and it just felt real good to be here, man. Have me on more often. That'd be fantastic.
I love it. Jenna, what do you got for us?
I just have to say, I love that Croaky and Little Icky are now our little mascots of this podcast. I think that that's just great.
Little Icky. Oh my God. I forgot about Little Icky, just like his father.
Oh my God. I think about that like once a week now, ever since you brought that up during the Eternals episode. But no, this was so much fun. I am so excited for the last two episodes. Like just getting to see the classic Loki costume in live action, just that perfectly. I am just like, whatever they do in the next two episodes, I am so excited to see it. So
we're at that same point again, like we were with WandaVision, where it's like, we only have two episodes. Like, how are they going to pull this off? We'll see how they do it. We'll see how they do it next Wednesday and the Wednesday after that. And then the following Friday, we have Black Widow. What? We are eating. All right. That is today's episode of the Phase Zero podcast. Please share this episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Drop those links on Twitter. I'll throw you retweets. I want to grow this thing. I want to give Kevin Feige no excuse to not come on the show for a full hour. We're going to be the biggest show ever. Chris Killian, great job. Congratulations on a wonderful Phase Zero debut. You should all go watch The Daily Distraction. Chris hosts a daily news show on our on the comic book Instagram at comic book and our YouTube channel. And he puts a lot of work into it, and it's a really funny show. I highly recommend watching that, giving it 5 minutes of your day every day. It's a good escape from our reality here. That's it. Hit me up at Brandon Davis PD. If y'all want to talk more, you should also hit up our hosts, because we love talking with you guys. And that's Phase Zero. See you next week.